Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this event, which is organized by the Hellenic Observatory here at the LSE. As one of our regular events during term time, we hold both seminars and these kinds of panel discussions, which enable us to cover a wide variety of topics pertaining to contemporary Greece and Cyprus. And it's a great pleasure tonight to be able to host this event on, as you can see the screen behind me, Greek politics after the 2019 elections, future prospects. We have two excellent speakers tonight. Unfortunately, our third speaker, who was advertised, has fallen ill. Dionysios Dimitrakopoulos from Birkbeck College cannot be with us this evening, and we do apologize for that. But I'm sure that our two speakers tonight can make up for his absence in more ways than one. My name is Spiros Economidis. I'm the Deputy Director of the Hellenic Observatory, and I've been associated with it since before it was created, if that's possible. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speakers for this evening. Our first speaker this evening is Maria Karakliumi, who is probably well known to all of you. She's a political analyst, and her main occupation is she works for the Greek polling company RAS, which I think is also represented by some other members this evening here in the front row, and welcome to you as well. Maria holds a number of degrees, some from Greece and some from the UK. I think the one that she wanted us to highlight, because she's in the UK this evening, is the master's degree she's received from the University of Essex, which is also studied, of course, in Athens at the Athens University of Economics and Business and at Pandio. And she's got more strings to her bow than simply political science and polling. She actually admitted to me, rather begrudgingly, that she also has a degree in international relations, which is where I come from. So well done. That's very, very good. Maria this evening is going to speak about directly on the theme of Greek politics after the 2019 elections. I won't give anything away, but she's got an interesting take on what's happened and perhaps what should happen in the future, especially in the area of the centre-left. And she'll be explaining a bit more about that in her presentation. Our second speaker this evening, who is not only a personal friend, but also more importantly a friend of the Hellenic Observatory, is Dr. Spiros Kosmidis, who's a lecturer in the Department of Politics and International Relations at the University of Oxford. Spiros has spent time with us at the Hellenic Observatory. He's a regular visitor, and we welcome him back always very openly. He conducts research on political attitudes, public opinion, elections, with particular interest, as he says, in campaigns, political representation, and electoral accountability. Spiros is going to concentrate on Greek political parties and voters after the Syriza period. Our speakers will each speak for about 20 minutes, which will give us plenty of time afterwards for discussions, questions, and answers. I will just warn you in advance that you are being taped. So your behavior is being monitored. The reason why we're taping you is not so we can put you on file, but simply because this event will be podcast, so please behave appropriately and ask appropriate questions. And also, if those of you who cannot keep still and need to tweet or be on Twitter during the duration of this event, if I remember correctly, it's the hashtag is LSCGreece, and you can do what you want on the Twitter sphere on that particular hashtag. Again, welcome to this evening's event, and without further ado, I ask Maria Karakliumi to come and share her thoughts with us. Thank you very much.
Good evening. Thank you very much for the invitation. I will share my thoughts, and actually I will let you know how the Greek elections were in 2019 in Greece. If you can see this map, this is how Greece looks like. Greece has, roughly speaking, 55 electoral regions, and those in pink is the regions that Syriza holds, which is the party that used to be in government. And all of the others that are blue is all the electoral regions that New Democracy, the current government, holds. In the first row, you can see 39.85, which is the percentage that New Democracy got in the last election. 31.3 is what Syriza got. Then is the party which is called Kinima Lagis, which is 8.1. Then is the Communist Party, 5.3. And then it's 3.7 for the Greek Solution, which is a far right political party, and then it's 3:44 for DiEM25, which is Mera 25, which has a leader who's known to you, Yanis Varoufakis. All the other parties hold 8% of the electorate, meaning that according to the Greek law, when that amount of votes increases, it means that it's easier for the first party to form a single party government. So currently, with 158 MPs, New Democracy can have a single party government because in Greece we have a parliament of 300 people. So usually when you are with journalists and people who are in the media, they ask you for a title. And they ask you in a sentence to tell them, can you please describe in three or four words how was the Greek elections? Well, according to my opinion, we had elections in May 2019, when we had elections for the European Parliament, and we had at the same time local elections for the 13 regions and the 332 municipalities. I would rather say that the May elections was a message in a bottle for the Syriza government, and then I will explain to you why. And the July elections, which was the early parliamentary elections, reminded me of a book of Gabriel García Márquez, probably you know him. It was a chronicle of a death foretold for the Syriza government at that time. I insist that the parties competing for the government was Syriza and New Democracy. And you can see their leaders. The leader of Syriza is Alexis Tsipras, who was the prime minister back then. And the leader of New Democracy at that time was Kyriakos Mitsotakis, who is currently the prime minister of Greece. Well, I will introduce a little bit the political parties. Syriza is a party since 2013. It used to be a coalition of many ideological movements. And that's an obstacle for Syriza, actually, that costed a lot to Syriza. It had strong leadership back then under Alexis Tsipras. Unfortunately, it's a party as heterogeneous as possible according to what happens in Greece. Probably for other countries, it's not a heterogeneous party. And it had few party members compared to its electoral percentage. In 2015, its electoral percentage was roughly speaking 36%, but the party members were a few compared to what other political parties have in Greece. New Democracy is what we call in Greece a traditional political party. It is 45 years old, with the pathologies that the 45-year-old party can have. It has thousands of party members since the 70s and the 80s. New Democracy didn't get any party members right now. And although Kyriakos Mitsotakis was elected from a big number of people, the leadership of New Democracy at the elections was not as strong as in Syriza. And I will explain why. Usually when we do polling for the elections, we don't only ask people what they will do at the election day, but we ask for their impression on many political, their political views in general. So we asked people, actually here is with us one of the people who gets inspired, has inspiration and poses questions. So Mrs. Kondolefa suggested to ask people what will happen next, to ask them what they think that will happen next. So we asked them, in case that on the Sunday election, Syriza loses the elections, what do you believe that Syriza could do? Should Syriza change Alexis Tsipras from the president, change leader or not? Most of the people said, everybody knew that Syriza will lose the elections, most of the people said no, it shouldn't change its leader, the leader is fine. We did the same question for New Democracy, roughly the same. We asked, what will happen if New Democracy will be the first political party in the next election, but it cannot form a single party government? Should they change their leader or not? There were more people saying that they should change their leader, although he will be the winner, but without going all the way through and having a single party government. That's why I say that the leadership of New Democracy back then was weaker than the leadership of Syriza. Okay. So the leaders competing for prime minister was prime minister back then, Alexis Tsipras, who is a leader with stronger communication than political skills. He didn't have any family tradition. He was a politician. He's the first generation from his family. He didn't have any parents or grandparents in politics. He had the ability to divide Greek people, and he divided Greek people, especially at the referendum of 2015, when he asked for a no vote. Most of the prime ministers the previous years in Europe, they lost their referendums. You can see Italy or you can see Britain. Why? Because most of them, they asked for a yes vote. Tsipras won the referendum because he asked for a no vote. Usually it's easier to say no, because when you have to say yes, most of the time you have to say why you say yes, and you have to try to persuade people for the yes vote. Unfortunately, he didn't meet people's expectations. I would say that usually when you have successful governments are usually you remember a successful government for something. I don't think that you remember for something positive Syriza. And he didn't meet people's expectations because, there is a misinterpretation. Greek people misinterpret what he said in 2015. In 2015, he said that we had enough of the Memorandum of Understanding, because by the time we had the Memorandum of Understanding in Greece, nobody explained why we should have the Memorandum of Understanding. Most of the politicians used to say to us that we should have the Memorandum of Understanding because it's for your own good and it's for the country's benefit. But nobody had the ability to explain it all the way. For the first memorandum, it was PASOK, because PASOK was a socialist party. And whatever the Memorandum of Understanding was proposing to the Greek economy and to the Greek society, it was more liberal than socialist, so that people had to fight with their own ideology, and actually they just voted for it instead of going and explaining to the society. So when Tsipras said that we had enough of the Memorandum of Understandings and we should change, people realized, actually interpreted, that we should change and we should go back to 2009. But nobody could go back and have the life that he or she had before 2009. And he didn't make any political progress in terms of strengthening the institutions. When you have a country like Greece, where institutions are, I would rather say, weak, what you should try to do is to strengthen the institutions and to strengthen the accountability and to try make things better. But unfortunately, what they did is many people thought that it's better to get connections with the government rather than to have strong institutions for people and that government shouldn't affect them. Transparency was not strengthened as well. However, these were one of the reasons why he lost the elections. On the other hand side, we had Kyriakos Mitsotakis. Everybody knew that he's a purple-born politician with strong family tradition. His father was a prime minister, and he comes from the Venizelos family. I know that the chair here is called Eleftherios Venizelos. Venizelos was his father's uncle. He considers himself as a technocrat. Well, we have to define what is a technocrat. As far as I know, he was working for banks at some time in his life. But since he was 34, he's an elected politician. So he just defines himself as a technocrat. I'm not sure if he is. He launches himself as an effective and rational politician, and we have to admit that although he comes from a political family, he gradually built his political supremacy. Something very positive for him is that he didn't make any promises to the Greek people. He just said that I will launch a new political behavior in the Greek politics, and he said that we will be different from Syriza in terms of political behavior. So why the May election was a message in a bottle for Syriza? What usually happens in governments in Greece is that they are most of the time isolated in the four walls of the Maximos Mansion. Maximos Mansion is the place where the Prime Minister has his office. Most of the time people are isolated over there, and they do politics. I say that it's a politics for themselves. They don't actually realize most of the time what their policies will be for the people outside those four walls. So they didn't believe in any polls. That defeat was the size of the defeat was unexpected for Syriza. They didn't believe in any polls. We were constantly telling them that you have to believe to the polls, because 50% of the people who voted for you in 2015, now they are questioning you. They're saying, I'm not sure, I don't like the way Syriza governs, I'm not sure if I will vote or not. 50% of those people were loyal to the party, and they used to say that I will vote again for Syriza. It was 12 to 14% of those people who voted in 2015 for Syriza who used to say, I will vote for New Democracy now. I don't care if my ideology is different than New Democracy, but I will vote for New Democracy. 30% was the amount of the Syriza voters who used to say, either I will not go to the polls at all, or I haven't decided what to do yet. So what they thought is that those people at the end, they had the strong impression that at the end those people will trust them again. Probably they underestimated New Democracy and Kyriakos Mitsotakis. Probably you've heard that Obama commented on Tsipras that Alexis Tsipras is the man who always wins the elections. So under that certainty, Tsipras and Syriza thought that they will win again. And they thought that Greek people are not in favor of right-wing political parties and that the left will rise again. Actually, they didn't give us a tempting dilemma in order to make people prefer Syriza from New Democracy. In the local level, and I think that this is a crucial factor for them, because we had the European Parliament elections and local elections. At the local level, they didn't suggest people to vote people who were popular in their municipalities. What happens in Greece usually in the big municipalities, which is the municipality of Athens, the municipality of Piraeus, and the municipality of Thessaloniki, along with 10 more cities in Greece, usually political parties suggest people to support people for mayors. At this time, they didn't do it because they didn't do it the previous time as well, because there are party restrictions. According to Syriza political party, at the very end, in the local level, those who decide are the party members. And the party members currently in Syriza are those party members who were party members when Syriza was around 4% of the electorate. So at the 36% of the electorate they used, they still had the same people. And those people were not very popular in their societies because they had some other political roots. And actually, I would rather say that they lost track, they lost connection with the society. The groups that left them were people who were self-employed, especially because they had big taxation as well. There were other reasons apart from ideology. It was well-paid, because when you say well-paid, you might think of well-paid people as in London, so I would rather say people paid above average in the private sector in Greece. It was retired and old people, it was unemployed, it was well-educated, people who had graduate degrees that they didn't like Tsipras and Syriza, and it was center-left voters. I will add another group of people, which was people at the age of 35 to 44, and that's the age group of Alexis Tsipras. This age group never trusted Tsipras, not even in 2015, and you might understand why. So the people's message from the elections was that it was a message to Syriza. We had enough for Syriza. We need something else. It was a message to New Democracy. We trust you, but we trust you as the less evil, not as something new and positive that comes to make our lives better. And to the political system in general, it was that we need a normal country, by normal country meaning that when you go to the school, there are teachers. When you go to the hospital, there are doctors. When you go to the bus stop, there is a bus to come. And the feeling to the people that there will be a future, not a better future, there will be a future for themselves and their children. So we need to get back to normality in the way that a Western democracy believes that normality might be. So what will happen next? And that's actually one of the questions we had for this session. I believe that the group of people who determines the outcome of the Greek elections, that determined the outcome in 2015 and determined the outcome this year, is roughly speaking a group of people which is roughly speaking 6 to 8% of the electorate, and defines itself that group as pro-Europeans. There are voters who have roots in the center-left and the center. There are people who believe that the country can be better governed, but not with with a mixture of free market policies, that the government should invigilate market as well, not in a way the communists believe, but in a more contemporary way. And there are people who remember how the Greek middle class was, and they seek for a new middle class. I believe that the difference will come from the center-left, but the center-left needs a new leader. I'm not sure that we have such a person right now in Greece. Probably we have to import it from abroad. There are so many Greeks living abroad. I believe that we are in a need of a man or a woman in her or his 40s that would be well-educated, meaning that he can speak English or a few more languages. With strong European and international perspective. That will be charming but rational as well, because what happens now in Greece, we have a few politicians in their 40s. Most of them, because they're elected for 5 or 6 or 8 years, now they believe that by the time they were first elected, they launched it themselves as young and nice people, so they're now in their 40s or in 45 or late 40s, and they still believe in that. They don't improve themselves in order, in the previous elections, although we had so many things to do, I used to go to small groups where they were hosting some politicians, and especially politicians of my age. Most of them, what they were trying to do is to be charming and to be as nice as possible, but they were never giving answers to the political questions. Okay, you might be a well-looking woman or a well-looking man, okay, that's fine, but what can you do to change my life? Most of them, they didn't even cross their minds to give an answer on that. So we need a nice person, but we need rational people as well. And we need a person ready to restore common sense in Greece. And what do we mean by common sense? A few days ago, it was a union strike in Greece. And we have some symbols in Athens. One of them is a statue of Harry Truman, that man, you probably know him. He used to be president of the United States. So back in the 60s, I think, somebody erected that statue. So contemporary Greek rebels, what they feel is that in every strike, they can go and attack that statue. And what they do is they usually have a tin of paint, and they just go and throw paint to the statue, and that's what they feel that revolution might be like. So a few days ago, police was there too. So there was a problem with them because the police tried to tell them to leave, and they wanted to do what their duty was on that particular time. And Greek people had to discuss on police's intervention there, because they said the only thing those people wanted to do is just to throw a little paint to the statue. So the basis of our problem is that what we believe that is normal or not, and how we believe that the rule of law should be in the country and how this country should operate. Okay. I have something else, but how can I go to the next slide? I'm sorry. I have two more. Sorry, that was it. Okay. Excuse me. Okay, that's fine. Thank you. I'm sorry. That was a technological problem. So, what are the challenges for the Greek political parties right now? Of course, New Democracy, who's the government now, has it's able to do more movements. I think that New Democracy needs to launch new ways of governance and parliament operation. Parliament operation in terms of legislation. Because usually, when you introduce new laws and when you introduce a bill to the parliament, that's fine if you just introduce that. What happens in the way you vote for the laws usually makes government vulnerable to transparency. Because there are sometimes you introduce a new law, but apart from that new law, you introduce some small, let's say, corrections to a few previous laws, which means that some people get real benefits from that. So New Democracy has to persuade people that it's different from the past, and that's, I believe, very difficult. It has to give the positive approach in politics, meaning that we can do something different, we can change, we can improve, we have future, we have to believe it. It has the chance to make a new middle class with another economic with other economic policies, and by bringing, I hope that it will bring what we say anaptics in Greek, meaning that we will have development. And I think it should move closer to the ideological center, because it has some people who believe that New Democracy should move a little bit right into the ideological spectrum. Syriza, it's now in the opposition party, but it's now or never for Syriza. It needs to decide, is it a political party or not? Is it a political party, or is it a think tank of 60-year-old political dinosaurs who believe that that Greece should remain in the 70s. It needs to accept party members without face control procedures. What Syriza launched about 10 days ago, a platform called iSyriza, which means that you can be online and you can be a party member. But that procedure doesn't stop there. It doesn't mean that by the time you're online, you're a party member. By the time you're online, you just make an application. Your application goes to the place where you live, where is the local Syriza branch. And then the people ask Alexis Tsipras now and Syriza that to get all those applications and all those people to go to the local branch of Syriza to have some discussion with all those people. So that's why I mean face control procedures. And then we have the other smaller political parties. They should begin by accepting that common sense is a way of thinking. And what we mean by common sense, because we have to define it, to redefine it. And they have to realize their size, because most of the time they come to the public dialogue and when they are addressed to people, and they feel that they're at least governing half of the earth, not Greece, and they only have 5 to 6% of the electorate. So they have to realize their size and what they can do for the society and how many people of the society vote for them. I believe that Greece now reminds me of, there is a book, probably you've read it, by Joseph Conrad. That book is called Youth. There is a man when he's old, and he describes, by the time he was young, he's a man who works for the shipping industry. And back then he works for a ship called Judea. And that ship has a motto called, that's a very old ship ready to collapse. But that ship has a motto, and the motto of that ship goes, do or die. I think that's the time now for Greece. Either we do or we die after so many years of austerity measures, after so many years after we were bankrupt, we need to make decisions, and we need to decide if we want to follow all the way through to be a Western democracy in the way we mean in Europe, or if we will die. That's all for me. I hope I had more than 20 minutes. Thank you.
Right. Let me begin by thanking the Hellenic Observatory for the invitation. I'm always happy to be here. I don't know if I'm going to be charming, as Maria instructed. I don't aspire to give any political answers to the problems faced by Greece. Actually, there are too many problems, as I'm going to be discussing today. Actually, the way Maria introduced the problems and how things have changed over time is a very good way to see the debates that we've had in the last couple of years, how things evolved over time. What I'm going to try and do is try to reflect on the things that happened 10 years ago. In May 2020, we commemorate 10 years of the bailout agreement. We commemorate or celebrate, depending on where you come from, 10 years of austerity, 10 years of a huge restructuring of the political landscape, and 10 years where actually we didn't learn anything. And we didn't learn anything in terms of why did this thing happen to Greece, how could we solve the problems that we had. And to some extent, because we live in a democracy, we should be blaming voters. So this is the one thing that I think I depart from what Maria is saying, that I think she was placing a lot more emphasis on politicians. I tend to say it's the voters' fault. They choose politicians who don't know how to speak English or who can put themselves forwards as technocrats when they haven't even worked a day in their lives. And I'm not talking about Mitsotakis or anyone else. A lot of people do it. People are well known in Greece. So 10 years ago, we entered a situation where we were having turbulent times. We're talking about a government suddenly realizing that the deficit is not 6% and it's 15%. European partners asking for austerity measures. The markets being crazy compared to what's happening now, actually, and having borrowing costs extremely high for anything viable to happen in Greece. And of course, we had a new government back then. May 2010, the bailout agreement is ratified in Parliament. We have policy in positions. Many of them are fairly focused on unit labor costs, things that are completely relevant to Greece, but formulae to come up with a policy that would take Greece out of the turbulent times. And of course, at the same time, and within 1.5 years, what's happening is
voters start going crazy in many ways. Suddenly you have people that you didn't know about becoming prominent, you know, agenda setters. Populist parties emerging out of nowhere. You had, I don't know how many months of people occupying Syntagma Square, the main square of Athens, the indignants, in some occasions actually threatening to enter parliament. And in many ways, for example, in 2010, people dying during strikes and a lot of violence. Violence became something that you expect in the same way that Maria was describing this whole Truman thing, that they were just throwing red paint on a statue. It became something very normal. So being violent was, yeah, they deserve it. Who? Doesn't matter. Someone deserves it. There should be some violence. What happened within 3 years after the PASOK election in 2009, we had a complete restructuring of the political landscape. Suddenly, Syriza became extremely prominent. Not extremely, in terms of numbers, it wasn't that high, but it was high enough. When New Democracy decided to side with the memorandum kind of parties, 10% of New Democracy left, Independent Greeks was formed. At the same time, 2012, it's the first time that we see with actual numbers a neo-Nazi party gaining support in Greece. You would see them everywhere. They didn't have any particular demographic that would support them. Okay, there are some differences, but everyone would support them. Low numbers, but still there, something not to be proud of as a country. And of course, this had implications not only for what's going on for the small parties, but also for the larger ones. So a New Democracy had to be responsive to voters that were voting for Golden Dawn. It was, you know, there were people that used to vote for New Democracy at some point, most of them, at least. Here's public opinion with respect to voting intentions. I mean, you can see the green line being PASOK, the blue line being New Democracy, starting from 2009. And you can see the rapid sort of change in what happened to PASOK. PASOK was a 45% party, and suddenly in May 2012, they got 12% of the vote. It was a huge change. And of course, since Maria, and I agree with her, thinks that it's that political, not PASOK, but the center-left, that is going to be the pivotal kind of group to listen to, It's very interesting to at some point discuss why did this thing happen. So what are the causes of this collapse, taking into account or forgetting about the memorandum and the consequences it had for its core constituency, okay, which was the poorer classes. After the twin elections in 2012, with Golden Dawn having a very respectful 6%, Syriza becoming the dominant power of the anti-right bloc, so rather than PASOK, it was Syriza now becoming this power, they win office. After some, I think, unfortunate decisions by the previous government, not finishing the program, not being more open to a different kind of president of the Hellenic Republic, it led to what I think is a catastrophic year, which was 2015. Catastrophic for two basic reasons, some of them elaborated upon by Maria. The first thing, we had the proud yet extremely costly negotiations, something that, you know, it actually costs 3 or 4 years of growth in Greece. This is an amazing number if anyone can conceive it. And then the July referendum, won by Tsipras, 60% to 40%, that I think, you know, it brought about the capital controls, but at the same time, it gave us, I think, so there is a silver lining in this July referendum, it gave us the reversal of this decision, and the fact that after this, Syriza actually realized that the only way out of this mess was to deliver on the memorandum. This is extremely important because otherwise we'd be in deep trouble economically and politically. The September election is there. thinking about voters, because this is the first claim I made, we should be blaming voters in a democracy. Consider a scenario where a prime minister says, vote for no. People voting for no, 60%, triumphant, then 17 hours later saying, well, we're going to go for yes, then calling an election in September and winning that election. You understand that the situation in Greece was deeply problematic and voters actually didn't know what they wanted. One of the things that happened was that the extreme side of Syriza left the party. I'm talking about purges here. There was no purge. They just left the party. They created smaller parties. And these were people who were more extreme in their views about the economy, the political system, liberal democracy in many cases. And what voters gave Syriza was a second chance. But what we observed after this second chance was a party that is extremely confused in terms of ideology. You would see people who would come from the Communist Party, from PASOK, but also from the independent Greeks, from the Karamanlis era, creating one sort of coalition, extremely stable politically, but ideologically all over the place. It was a disaster for anyone studying ideologies in Greece. There was it was impossible to figure out what was going to happen. I remember I was thinking, okay, after 2 years, to survive, Syriza would have to, one way or the other, let Kamenos go. But the thing was that Syriza voters didn't care. They were happy with Kamenos, and to me, that's a surprise. To be fair, though, it was very hard for Syriza to implement any policy. So I'm talking about the ideology, and the fact is that Greece didn't have the room to maneuver policy in any way in the last 8 or 9 years. Having said that, we need to be fair to what Syriza succeeded. They were good at doing two things. I think they completed the bailout agreement. It was the first one, the first government that completed the bailout agreement at a huge cost, but they did. And the second thing was the Prespres agreement. I've put a question mark here because after yesterday's events and Zaev's note on the agreement, we should see whether this was actually a success, because a lot of people who are very serious were saying, yeah, perhaps we should have the North Macedonia kind of outcome, but the actual legal document is not strong enough. Perhaps they were right. What happened with all those things, even with the Prespres agreement being the only one that actually created some tensions in the coalition government, we saw a relatively robust parliamentary group of Syriza, given that they were perhaps delivering the most conservative, the most, I hate this word, neoliberal kind of program out there. The parliamentary group of Syriza was extremely robust, extremely strong, with just a few minor sort of defections here and there. What happened in the end was Syriza and Anel became one party, okay, a single party, building on the secondary dimension, not the left-right dimension, as we call it, but actually the dimension that relates to, are you with a memorandum or not? The problem that, you know, there is a paradox here. Everyone was the memorandum after 2018 or 19, but here you have it. This was how things were after Syriza won the second chance. And public opinion in Greece didn't change spectacularly. What we have here is, this is data from Public Issue. They measured the same sort of objects with respect to how trusting Greeks are towards those objects in 2015 and 2018, before Syriza lost. I think this was November 2018, the second reading of the data. Greeks trust the army, the police, church. They don't trust the Greek parliament. They don't trust politicians. They don't trust parties. Minor changes over time. The only change that is, I think, interesting is the last one here with the universities. You can see that universities are less trusted now than they used to be in the past. But again, I would say a very low figure there. Overall, not a lot of changes. I mean, since Maria works for Rush, it was very hard for polling companies to do field work, because of capital controls and many other problems that they had. So the amount of polling we have as researchers It was extremely low in terms of numbers. So it was hard for us to track dynamics or have consistent estimates of what was going on. The reality, though, was that after a couple of months of the second chance that I mentioned for Syriza, things were extremely stable. Here what you see is public opinion, voting intentions for New Democracy, the blue line, and Syriza, the orange, pinkish line. And these are all the polls collected, pulled together with a 10-day average, 10-poll average, actually. And you can see that after a while, not a lot of things would change. You can see that the final peak, which is the pressure of the two-party system to the smaller parties, who's going to have the a majority or not. But more or less, not many things happen in terms of fluctuations in public opinion. What this period brought, however, was, I think, a very mixed bag of outcomes. I think that the economy stabilized, so the markets, our partners, were very confident that Syriza would deliver on what they were agreeing to deliver. When the economy stabilized, Syriza's popularity stabilized as well. But there was a cost. I think that the strategy that Syriza employed to overtax the middle classes was not a good one. It created a very strange coalition of actors, as I explained previously, right-wing candidates before the election, left-wing rhetoric, let's get back whatever Prague or whatever they had in mind, no real agenda for the future, so there was no positive message for 2019 onwards. And even positive reforms in parliament, reforms that New Democracy and PASOK, less so in the past, didn't commit to, were masked by some rhetorical maximalism. There is this whole discussion now, since it was the 28th of October yesterday, there was this thing, who should be holding the Greek flag in the parade? And Syriza's sort of amazing idea was not to stop the parades because it's something that other kind of regimes do, but was to have a raffle for the person who would hold the flag and not the best student, which was the norm for I don't know how many years. This was, I think, you know, issues that were dominating the agenda, similar to the thing that happened in the Truman statues, like minor things with a lot of rhetoric, with a lot of divisive rhetoric from Syriza for no particular reason. However, the election showed something very, very simple, I think. And this is where I would be very cautious to say that Syriza doesn't have a future in Greece. I think they have a future. I don't know if it's a good one. I don't know if it's good for Greece or for the ideological bloc they represent, but they do have a future. I think it's tied to their leader, Tsipras, but I think they confirmed that they are the dominant power in the anti-right bloc. If you don't like the right-wing parties, this is the party you need to vote for. That's the bottom line. That's not good or bad. It is what it is. Okay. Things happened. New Democracy won after the European election. We can say that throughout the Mitsotakis sort of era in New Democracy, we have, with few exceptions, a responsible opposition party. By responsible, I mean, you know, you need to take things into perspective. You had Samaras before that, Karamanlis when he was in opposition with Simitis. These were people who would never propose something positive. They would just be very critical of whatever is going on. I think that Mitsotakis, perhaps knowing that he would win the election, he positioned himself in a very responsible way. The few exceptions that I think were important, and probably he will have to face this decision he made, was the Prespas agreement and many other things that liberals, people who either are in the center of the ideological spectrum or the center left, wouldn't be unhappy having, like gay rights, social rights, nationality issues, and how we treat immigrants. Immigration is going to be a huge issue, as I'm going to be discussing in some of my following slides. After the election of July 7, we have the first normal government. By normal, I don't mean a good or a bad. We have a government without a bailout agreement on top of us, or more or less so, because there are still some aspects of the agreement that are long-term and we don't have power over them. Okay, also a problem, I think, that New Democracy will have to face. At the same time, I think that the cabinet that he came up with was comprised of technocrats. Actually, it's not technocrats in government, it's PASOK in government. So you will see a lot of people who were actually the former general secretary of PASOK, which is a very important position to hold in a socialist party, is now a minister, one of the top ministers in the New Democracy government. I guess that's not a problem for Mitsotakis, it's for the minister himself. And also with a great economic momentum. I think that the economy seems to be at a very good position right now, not in terms of numbers per se, but actually because of what's going on. Is that going to continue? I have serious doubts, and I have serious questions as to whether the economic policy that the Mitsotakis government is putting forward is going to create a robust Greek economy. Since I'm not an economist, I'm just going to speculate about this, and I ask economists to comment on it. New Democracy has important challenges. I think that the bar has been set extremely high for no particular reason. New Democracy, for better or for worse, has no track record of implementing reforms, ever, in 45 years, with the exception of the EU in the 1970s, and given that PASOK was the dominant party for many years. New Democracy doesn't have a track record of policy reforms. And I think that parties that enter government with high expectations, like Trudeau, who won, of course, and Macron, they need to deliver quickly. And so far, if I may say, and it's early days, of course, the policy initiatives in Greece are extremely lightweight, symbolic, and I don't think that they will be able to see something positive in the near future. The most important thing that the Democracy will be facing, given the structure of the party and the kind of concessions that Mitsotakis has made within his own party, is the immigration and the refugee intake problem. I'm not sure that they will be able to keep it together as a party. We have a centrist leader of a right-wing party with extreme right-wing MPs, many of them. You don't need more than three or four to create a problem in a party. And there are more than them, perhaps. More than three or four. After France's veto, North Macedonia will become an issue. What will Mitsotakis say in the European Union? Will he be positive about North Macedonia or negative? This is an issue. I mean, he has his party, but he has the country as well. I don't know how he's going to respond. This might cause problems. How will the Prime Minister then respond to those extreme right-wing politicians within New Democracy? Again, I don't think he has a lot of power to do something. And it's not in his character to be confrontational. We might be seeing things in the near future. The most important things, I think, the most important problems that we might be facing is, you know, anyone who has spent a bit of time in the U.S., they all talk about a recession, a global recession coming up. Everyone who's living here knows that Brexit might have important implications for the rest of Europe, including Greece. Is the Greek economy robust? Is it ready for a global recession? I'm not entirely sure. Looking back and thinking about the reforms, the structural reforms that our partners have been asking for, we haven't done anything yet. 10 years and we haven't moved a single thing. Some minor things, but most of it has been the international climate changing and us benefiting from it, and actually at a much lesser extent compared to Portugal or Spain and, of course, Ireland. One important thing that the Prime Minister has to think about, and not only the Prime Minister, the Finance Minister as well, so now every year we need to have a 3.5 primary budget surplus. The Mitsotakis government, this is one of the symbolic kind of policies he initiated, was he said, I'm going to reduce the property tax, I'm going to reduce some other taxes, and suddenly he's missing out 1% of this 3.5% budget surplus. It's impossible to gain that, I think, mathematically, to be able to go to the 3.5%. Is he going to take the route of diplomacy and try to make the 3.5 1.5, which is much more sustainable? I don't know. It's a problem that you will have to face, and it can have serious consequences, considering that the global recession might be coming up. Now, conclusions. There are too many unknowns. Public opinion is extremely stable, as I showed you, but at the same time fluctuates in a way that we do not anticipate. One of the several models we have in political science, one that I think that has extreme empirical validity, is that public opinion works as a thermostat. Okay? The thermostat goes as follows. So imagine that we're having an issue like public spending, social spending. Imagine that we are having a government that spends a lot on social care. Public opinion, after a while, is going to deviate from that. It's going to go the other way. So they're going to be asking for tax reductions. When a government putting forward tax reductions, like the one we have now, starts cutting the deficit and not investing in services, public opinion is going to shift back to the left. And this thermostatic model is what creates change in government. So right now, I think it's early days to see this movement in the thermostatic model. Is Syriza going to be the other side of the coin? So should we expect Syriza to become the next government? I think, and I agree with Maria, Syriza needs to organize as a proper party. Right now, it's not even a political party. It's like a Facebook group that runs. I didn't anticipate this reaction. Yes. Will Syriza shift further to the center? I think they might. They've already done so, but not convincingly. I mean, the center is much harder than the left. To be center-left is much harder than being on the extreme left, from my experience at least. What is going to happen to PASOK and Kinal? It's still there. It's 8%. Is it going to collapse? Is it going to vanish? Are people just dying and eventually they're not going to be having any voters? I think this is key for the next election. Not a lot of people will die until the next election, hopefully. But it's 8%. And I think we had a chat with Maria previously, and I tend to agree with her. They're more than 8%, way more than 8%. People voted for Mitsotakis just to get rid of Syriza. I'm not sure whether they're going to return. I don't know if it is a leadership issue. I think that they're out there, and someone should just take that, a shovel and put them back where they belong. Two questions. The one I've already asked it, what's going to happen to the global economy? I speculated there's going to be a recession. I'm not an economist. I don't know whether there's going to be a recession. Are we ready for it? I don't think we are. What is going to happen in our neighborhood? What's going to happen in Syria? Refugee intake, immigrants, Turkey, the US, trade wars, all this thing create a lethal combination. Greece can benefit in many ways. I mean, it has been benefiting for the last 5 years. I don't know how the Greek economy would look like without this surge in Greek tourism because of what's going on in our neighborhood. But there are too many things to consider, and it's too early for predictions. In my view, it's going to be very hard to see Mitsotakis losing the next election. But I've said that before. And 4 months later, the government was voting for the memorandum, and now they have 8% of the vote. Okay? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much to both our speakers for their presentations. Much food for thought there. We've got about 25 minutes for questions and answers. I would invite you to ask your questions. Please do wait for the microphone before you ask your question. I know the acoustics in this room are pretty good, but we do have to take into account the podcast. And also, when you ask your question, because we don't have that much time, please make it a question and keep your questions and comments as brief as possible. And for the benefit of our speakers, if you could please identify yourselves so they know, generally speaking, where you're coming from. Over to you. The gentleman in the middle with the red scarf.
Hi. I've got a lot of questions, so I'll try to reduce them as much as possible. First of all, the one major factor that has had great influence in Greece is corruption. You haven't really dealt with that I think, number one. I'll give you one example of that, and that is the BBC reporter, Simon Reed, who went to Greece, and he said, right, he said, here we are in Athens, and here in Athens, if you have a swimming pool, you are supposed to pay a much higher property tax. He said, so we are going to count how many of these expensive villas with their swimming pools have are paying the proper tax. And so he said, we counted 300, I think it was 323 villas with swimming pools. Only 80 were paying the tax at the time. That's just one example.
Could we just have one more question, very brief, please, because there are lots of other people who want to ask questions as well.
Sure. So,
and that is one major issue I would like you to deal with, that the corruption and the evasion and so on and so forth. And the second one is that the power of the Greek Orthodox Church. You haven't mentioned that because you know, or you should know, that 50% of the National Bank of Greece is owned by the Greek Orthodox Church. And that's a lot of power, as well as the huge amount of property they own. So how about that? How about dealing with that?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please, if you want to have a go at answering those questions or responding to those comments, go ahead. Can I have a show of hands in the meantime for Maria? Please go first.
Well, I agree with corruption. That's what I said, that Syriza lost a major chance, because when you have weak institutions, as we have in Greece, and when you are a left-wing party government, what you should do is to try to promote and strengthen the institutions. So they didn't do anything in towards accountability and transparency. And the only solution to corruption is more democracy, is better institutions. So unfortunately, they didn't do anything on that. I will disagree with you with the Greek Orthodox Church, because the way the Greek Orthodox Church operates, I would rather say that it's closer to a company rather than to what you feel as churches in other countries. So what had happened, and many of us have already witnessed, is that when you have a new government, usually those people who first visit the new ministers, or the people who are close to the minister or vice ministers, are usually the priests, because the priests come from the Greek Orthodox Church, which is very well organized as a big company. And they go there to be sure that whatever church wants will it's all their benefits will retain no matter what the government is. And I would rather say that the church never decided the outcome of the elections. They cannot affect so many people. People who voted for Syriza in 2015 are the same people who voted for New Democracy in 2019, and they still keep on going to the church. And we used to measure how many people go to the church. Before the crisis, it was 30% of the Greek electorate who were going to the church very often, roughly speaking, once a week. That amount of people didn't change at the period of crisis. 30% of the people still go to the church once a week. So I won't say that the power of the Greek church is so crucial for the Greek electorate. At least not anymore. Ethniki Trápeza is something else, because it's one of the four systemic banks we have in Greece. And Ethniki Trápeza doesn't do any economic policy.
None at all.
According to my opinion, no. The banks didn't affect that much the economy of Greece. Actually, banks were rescued by the governments. They didn't rescue the government. From all the governments for the last decade.
The problem, starting with corruption, is
the main problem we're facing is, after 10 years and plenty of opportunities to fix important problems in our institutions that would remedy, that would actually lower corruption in Greece, we haven't done anything. I mean, that's the fact. I think that the 2009-2011 government started with some institutions that they're still out there, so Transparency, the Avia, and other of the financial crimes and things like that. But I don't think that governments were interested in dealing with that right now. There were more important issues for them. Corruption is something that has to do with trust, and tax evasion has to do with trust. Greece is an extremely low trust society. And the only way you can increase trust in a society, I think, is to have, I agree with Maria, more democracy, more accountability, and more transparency. And perhaps heavier sanctions in many ways. And we don't have that yet. I agree with you. Regarding church, I mean, of course, I understand where you're coming from with that. I don't think that even if Greece would suddenly go there and say, look, all these things that you own belongs to the state now, and we're not going to be paying for your priests, and there's going to be a separation in our constitution, I don't think that the Greek economy would be saved by this, or I don't think that voters would have any different worldview about what they want from government. Actually, the church, because they don't have any competition, here you have Catholics, Protestants, all kinds of denominations and religions, because they are a monopoly, they can do whatever they want. Is that good or bad? It has to do with where you're coming from. And I'll probably agree with you.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me take three questions now, and then you can answer whichever bits of the questions you want. The two gentlemen in front, then Kira, just behind.
Yeah, my name's Keith Raff, and I'm a former Member of Parliament here who got out before he was purged. Can I just thank Maria very much for her definition of qualifications for a centre-left leader? Charming, rational, common sense, strongly pro-European in his 40s, probably what most Labour Party members would like at the moment. But anyway, can I just connect that with this whole business of a new centre-left leader? Alexis Tsipras is still young. Do you think he's totally beyond the pale, or do you think he can mature? Because clearly he's got many years ahead of him politically. One further brief point, from what you both said, it's quite clear that Syriza is more cohesive. It had a robust parliamentary group. And Spiros referred to the tensions within Nea Dimokratia, namely a centrist leader and this hard right faction. Isn't it likely that in the next few months and years we're going to see those tensions come to the fore, and actually Syriza may take advantage of them?
Gentleman here with a tie.
Thank you. Dimitri Mounidis from the Hellenic Engineers Society. I'd like to agree with Mr. Kosmidis's comment that at the end of the day, the people get what they deserve. They vote for the politicians. So 10 years later, we have another son of an ex-prime minister. We have roughly the same split between the two main parties. Syriza dropped by 3%, but it was 35, 32. Do you see the electorate having actually changed in any way significantly over the last 10 years in what they believe? Because I know we talk about competency, but it seems to me that that isn't the real reason when they go and vote. It's what seems to suit them individually.
Hello, my name is Kira Garzo-Katsuyani. I'm a PhD student at the European Institute here at the LSE. And I wanted to ask you a question about administrative reform and the prospects of administrative reform, because I really like the definition of normality, the normal country that you gave, right? So to have teachers in the classroom, buses at the bus stop, etc., etc. These are matters of administrative capacity. They're not really matters of ideology. And I'm wondering, in your view, having, you know, followed those things very closely, has there been any government in the last 10 years that has made progress in that direction, A? And B, do you think that this particular government, based on its track record during the first, you know, few months of its tenure is showing some promise to that direction.
Okay, thank you very much. So we have, can Tsipras ever mature? What's going to happen to New Democracy in face of internal challenges? Has anything changed in terms of electoral politics and administrative reform? Let's start with you again, Maria, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Whichever bits of those questions you want to answer, please feel free to do so.
Well, I should point out that the last few years, Syriza changed from a small party struggling to enter the Greek parliament because there is a threshold of 3%, so if you don't get 3%, you cannot elect any MPs, to a party that governed Greece. That meant that it didn't mature in a way a political party can mature because it was a vast change. And if you see, that's why I insist that the main message comes from the European elections. Why? Because Syriza elected 6 MPs for the European Parliament. If you see those people, there is one person who was the first one that was a historical figure for Syriza. There is a former fashion model and former minister who defines herself as a right-wing politician. There are 2 journalists. One comes from the state TV, and he doesn't have any political experience. And there is a descendant of one of the biggest business families in Greece. And there is a famous actor who actually just launched a new way of a new definition on an EU MP, because he just said that he can be in Greece every Sunday to be a judge in a reality show where people dance. So probably I understand that being an MP at the European Parliament can be a very nice part-time job. So
well-paid one.
Yeah, okay. So what I'd like to point out is that all those people, they don't converge ideologically. But the Greek electorate voted for them. Why did they vote for them? Because Syriza is not yet a party that you believe that it's closer to you because of the ideology, but it's a party which is a power party, meaning that being closer to that to that political party, it means that you have a way to better approach the administration. So that's a problem for Syriza. I'm not sure if Alexis Tsipras has the political skills he needs to come back. But it doesn't mean that you need political skills to come back, because sometimes you come back because people, they don't have anybody else to vote for. In 2015, after the referendum, people voted for Tsipras again, not because he was the best one, actually because he was the best one we had back then, mm-hmm. because New Democracy didn't have a strong leadership. What else? So I believe that we need another person. Why? Just after the British referendum, I had the chance to discuss a little bit with Ed Miliband, because he visits Greece every year. So what he told us, and that's the difference on how you approach institutions and how you approach democracy, not you, meaning here in the UK. What he told me was that me and my party were... We thought that we should remain and not Brexit. But when I was again elected as an MP, people in my constitution told me that the majority of the British people voted for Brexit. You have to respect the referendum, and you have to work in the best way to do the Brexit agreement. That didn't happen in Greece. Alexis Tsipras asked for a no vote at the referendum, because it's easier to ask for no. That's what Matteo Renzi said when he lost the referendum in 2016. And he said, I asked for a yes vote, but it was easier for you to say no, because when you say no, you don't have to judge why no. You just say no. So Tsipras asked for a no vote, and he did get the vast majority. It was roughly speaking, 70%. But by the time he went to do the negotiations, he didn't respect that, because he thought that it was better for the country, it was for our own good to do something else. So That's a problem with the Greek institutions. That's a problem with the political system approaching institutions. And I believe that this is the basic sin that Tsipras has, and it will follow him to the end of his political career. In terms of the administration and if they've done anything yet, well, usually it takes two to tango, actually always takes two to tango, but the Greek administration is like, you're very young, but other people in this room might remember, it was a BBC series back in the 80s called Yes Minister. That was a nice man who was going to his ministry every day. And he had some people who were there from the administration. And he was launching new ideas and saying that we should do that or we should do something else. And the man from the administrator used to tell him, yes, minister, but we can't. So what the new government has to do is to inspire people as well. Because we have many people in the Greek administration. Some of them are educated because around 20 years ago, the PASOK government had launched what we call ASEP, which was it's a council where when you want to hire people in the Greek administration, then you have to go through that council, and most of them, they didn't want the politicians to intervene to be public servants. So there are people that are in the administration now, and they're educated, and they can do things. So they have to inspire them, and they have the pathologies of a 40-year-old party, New Democracy, and they have to overcome that they should cooperate with people that don't come from their political party.
Right, very quickly. Has public opinion changed in the last 10 years? The answer is no. So nothing has changed. There has been a shift from one way to the other, the pendulum, it swings back and forth. But in terms of the concept of, you know, holding government responsible, having an objective, impartial kind of understanding of what a government is doing and what it should be doing, I think that we are, not only Greeks, I think that's a general problem. We are what we call motivated reasoners. So we have some idea of what we like, and if that person we like says X, we agree with X without scrutinizing what X means, and without thinking of alternative ways to proceed. So I think that nothing has changed. So I was hoping that the crisis would sort of be a shock to our system, and things would change one way or the other. It didn't, okay, in many ways, and that's very sad. Extreme right factions within New Democracy, I think it's a matter of time. Within the next 2 or 2.5 years, you'll be having people creating, sort of keeping distance to what Mitsotakis is saying and doing. It's very clear that this is going to happen because public opinion will be favorable to New Democracy, so they will just need to appear one way or the other that they are existing for the next day, which might be in 5 years or 6 years. Who is going to survive there? I'm not entirely sure. Administrative reform, and I think we should be hopeful every single time. Yeah, that's why we have elections. For 6 months, we're happy, and then we realize that for reasons that Marie explained very nicely, it's very hard to change the civil services. Not only in Greece, everywhere. It's becoming very hard, very complex. The thing is that it's 2019, 2010, 2020 almost, and we don't know what kind of people do we need. There is no actual idea that, you know, we need 10 people doing this, 15 people doing that. And we either go the route of saying we need to lay off 10 people and perhaps hire 20 people in like teachers or whatever. This is not how it works. This is not how you reform a public administration. So I think there needs to be a vision about this. There needs to be someone to inspire civil servants to take cuts, change the direction of what they're doing. Am I hopeful that this is going to happen? No.
I should something else. I should add something else. You don't have job description in the Greek public administration. You do know that you have a title, You're either the Kitikos or something else, or υποχρεωτικής εκπαίδευσης, which is some terms. You either are a primary school graduate or you are a university graduate, but you don't have a job description. And that's one of the problems of the Greek administration. And I would like to add something else to your question, is that I believe that all the voters are rational voters. They rank order their preferences and they decide who meets their preferences best, so that's how they vote. So at the end of the day, they decide most of the time with their economic condition. Because if you see the Prespas agreement, when we were polling about the Prespas agreement, 70% of the electorate were against the Prespas agreement. But if you see places close to the new country, the North Macedonia, like it's the region of Western Macedonia, as we call it in Greece, the Thiki Macedonia. So the people there did vote for Syriza. Why? Not because they were close to that, and okay, they didn't like the agreement, but most of them are public servants who work for the Greek company that produces electricity and everything. So at the end of the day, people think, what will be best for me and my family in terms of my economic condition?
Okay, thank you very much. We have time for one more question. The lady there.
She's very keen. She's very keen.
Hi. My name is Maria Correa. I'm coming from King's College London. And basically, I want to ask, it's a rather heavy question, and it connects with what the first gentleman said about corruption. Basically, we know where the problems lie. They lie in no repercussions existing, so meaning in the legal system, and the intense correlation that it has with the political system, in the complexity of the public pension schemes, but every party that comes in power basically they does not address this. So what is your opinion on why, you know, even Papadimos said that whoever comes into power, they have to basically succumb to this system of corruption, otherwise they will not survive. So basically, what is your opinion on that, and how will it be resolved? Because, you know, an extension to that is that we thought that maybe entering the EU would resolve this, or the monetary union, but basically there has been no positive, change, let's say, to the Greek politics. So.
Okay, thank you. I think we've got the point there. Let's go back to the panel here. Spiro, why don't you go first this time and answer this question. Can there be change in terms of dealing with corruption, or is the political and legal system so deeply flawed that that's the way it is?
I mean, I think you put it into the right framework. I mean, you cannot become a politician without succumbing to pressures of corruption. It doesn't mean that all politicians are corrupt, of course, but what it means is that you turn the blind eye to things that you see next to you, and you're forgetful, and you're like, okay, I didn't see that. But if you wanna become prime minister or an MP, you'll need to see things around you that you probably won't like, normatively or in terms of your value system. The choice is, do I stay in politics or not? If you say that, okay, that's a corrupt decision, that's a corrupt action, you need to get out of politics because there are too many people knowing the same thing. It's like the mafia. But, you know, I think that the problem is not that it's not as complicated. I think it's so structural that it's not even politicians who have any power over corruption. It's huge. It's part of the system that we have created, not now, not in the last 40 years, in the last 150 years, and it's very difficult to deal with.
Maria.
Well, I have a friend who says that in order to change Greece, we need to transplant a new electorate. So we can start with transplant.
The British one, yeah. That'll solve all problems.
Well, he doesn't mention where to get it. So what I believe is that we have to transplant different politicians. Well, I had run for the elections, and I was elected as a vice governor of Attiki, which is the biggest area in Greece. And actually, I was in the place with fewer problems than the others, because I was in the south part of Attiki, where people are more well off, and okay, we don't have so many problems, we have infrastructure and everything. People are very much corrupted, but you have to make them feel that you're invigilating him or her, and that you invigilate them. So you have to fight for that. But if you fight yourself, you cannot do anything. You have to ask for, I was the vice governor, I was asking the governor to solve some problems, and most of the times I had to use other measures in order to tell him that either you do it or I will leave. Or sometimes I had to tell him either you take those people from there because they're corrupted and move them somewhere else, otherwise I will call the TV. So you cannot administer like that. So I decided after 6 years in politics to go back to my job, and I'm here and now a happy person analyzing what happens in Greece.
Right, thank you very much. Before I ask you to join me in thanking this evening's speakers, let me just publicize our next event, which I think should be of interest to all of you in this room and perhaps more. Next Tuesday, the 5th of November at 6:30, we have a presentation of the book, The Last Bluff, How Greece Came Face-to-Face with Financial Catastrophe and the Secret Plan for its Euro Exit. We will have with us the two authors of the book, Victoria Dendrinou and Eleni Vagitioti, and we will have as discussant Hugo Dixon, who's a well-known journalist and commentator on Greece, in the Hong Kong Theatre at 6:30. We would love to see you all there. And please join me now in thanking our two speakers this evening for a wonderful time.